Let us pray. God of love and mercy, you who can hold all we offer, please be with me and with all of us as we search for your life-giving ways in these old and new words. Amen. A few days ago, our younger son Simon came down the stairs after doing his morning jobs, brushing his teeth, washing his face, putting on his clothes, including his socks, which seems to be a daily struggle for him. This is the normal routine. It happens every morning. But what was different about this morning is that he came down the stairs wearing a hat. The hat we bought him last year for Canada Day. A red and white hat with a maple leaf and Canada spelled out in bold letters across the front. Simon came down the stairs and asked, "Daddy, can I wear this hat to school today?" And I looked at my wife and I knew we had exactly the same thought at exactly the same moment, and I quickly blurted out, no, buddy, I'm so sorry. I'm worried people might get the wrong idea if you wear that hat right now." And as I was saying it, I could feel myself getting embarrassed and angry at why I was saying it. I was saying it because my son's hat is the same kind of hat we have been seen being worn by people in downtown Ottawa and on the Ambassador Bridge and other places in Canada in the past weeks. And although I know my son just really likes his hat, I didn't want his teachers or other parents to think that our family was making a political statement about how the protests turned occupations have dominated our attention these past weeks. It's a hard thing to explain to a 7-year-old who just wants to wear a hat to school. In our Luke reading today, we hear Jesus offering some of his most well-known and often quoted teachings. "Turn the other cheek, do unto others as you would have them do to you. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful." And perhaps the most well-known and certainly the most radical, "Love your enemies." Love your enemies. Now, I know that there is diversity of thought in our community, and I only claim to speak from my own experience, but the people I am having the most trouble loving these days are the ones that I think should know better. The ones who take something that I love and express it in ways that are contrary to my values. The ones who take a common story that have access to the same source material and use it to enforce a worldview that I not only do not share but oppose. For me, these days, this is happening with my country and it is happening with my faith. CBC published a story the other day with the headline, "For many inside the Freedom Convoy, faith fuels the resistance." And it declares how some protesters say that they went to Ottawa on God's instruction. In the past week, countless sermons have been preached in Ottawa on megaphones and makeshift stages. The words of Jesus, quote, "waft in the air and mix with the rumble of diesel engines and fumes, thumping dance music and the tinge of marijuana," unquote. Being a Christian who sees a very different message in the words and ways of Jesus, seeing the things I love, the symbols and stories that bring meaning to my life used in this way, to be honest, embarrasses me to think that others might think that this is what I stand for. It angers me that in the eyes of the world, the people with the megaphones so often define what Jesus is seen to be, who he was, what he stood for. Love your enemies. When that which I love is co-opted and distorted, love your enemies. I don't know, Jesus, that's a really hard ask. The primary meaning of the root of the Greek word for enemy is to hate. When we have been hurt or embarrassed, we are more susceptible to fall into the clutches of hate. Hate and often its ugly outcome, retribution. To hurt as we have been hurt. to embarrass as we have been embarrassed. This was the choice faced by Joseph in the Genesis story that Doug read for us earlier. Joseph was the favorite son of the patriarch Jacob. He was also a very arrogant young man. His self-importance and privileged place in the family angered his brothers. They hated him. They hated him to the point where they sold him into slavery. The story goes that Joseph ended up in Egypt, but being a very clever man, he ended up being the interpreter of the Pharaoh's dreams, and in time worked his way into being the second most powerful person in the empire. Years later, after a famine in Israel, the brothers also ended up in Egypt seeking food and aid. In the dramatic scene from Genesis 45, the brothers come face to face with Joseph. Upon realizing that this really is the long-lost brother that they sold into slavery, the brothers cower in fear of retribution for what they have done to him. The power dynamic from years earlier has been completely reversed. Joseph has all the influence in this new dynamic and men at arms at his command. With a word, he could harm them as he had been harmed. These so-called brothers that treated him like chattel, these people that should have known better. For Joseph, this could have been his moment of retribution. He only had to say the word, and the hammer would fall. The other day, I was sitting at my desk here at the church, and my cell phone rang, my cell phone. I didn't recognize the number, but I answered it. A man introduced himself and said he wanted to talk about the Freedom Rally in Ottawa. I said, okay, with my radar starting to blip. He said he was not a member of our church, but he was a Christian and a proud Canadian, and that he supports the truckers. In fact, he traveled to Ottawa last weekend to take part in what he called the movement, and he wanted to know what I, as a church minister, thought about the rally and the government response and what the church ought to be doing. Two things flashed through my mind in rapid succession. The first was fear. I was scared that something I had said from this pulpit had put me on the radar of some Facebook group, and now my cell phone was out there and I was going to get phone bombed every couple of minutes. The first thought was fear, and the instinct was to end the call immediately. But then the second thing came into my mind, an image this time, the image that is on the front cover of your bulletins, the image of a rock that stands at the entrance to the Tent of Nations just outside of Bethlehem that displays these words in Arabic, English, and German: "We refuse to be enemies. We refuse to be enemies." These were the words that pushed out the fear in my mind, and so this stranger and I started a conversation. And we talked and we talked for over 30 minutes. And I will tell you that we disagreed on almost everything. On vaccines, on safety protocols, on what freedom means, on the role of government, on the mission of the church. But the one thing we did agree on, I think the most important thing, was that it was very important to be talking to each other. It was vital to be talking to each other, not yelling at each other, not calling each other names, not flaming each other on social media, but talking to each other, to hear each other's perspectives and lived experience, to talk to each other with open hearts, and to try to find some common ground. The book of Genesis says that this is what Joseph did with his brothers. Given what he went through, one could easily imagine him feeling anger and resentment and perhaps even hatred. One could easily imagine him seeking retribution, to harm as he had been harmed, to embarrass as he had been embarrassed. But that is not what he does. He draws his brothers near to him. He shows vulnerability. He recalls what they have in common, a common family, a common faith in God. Joseph lowers his weapons. He opens his heart. He makes the first move. And the story concludes that after this, his brothers talked to him. After this, they talked with each other. In 2016, the then moderator of the United Church of Canada, Reverend Jordan Cantwell, penned an open letter with the headline, "I Love Donald Trump." Perhaps you remember it. It caused quite a stir at the time. The context was specific to the divisive words and actions of the U.S. president, but I see the message of the letter as a clarion call for where we are as a nation and as a church right now. The letter, the moderator says, "Choosing to love even those whose words and actions are filled with hate and division does not mean accepting their behavior or tolerating injustice. Whenever fear becomes the dominant force in our lives, it inevitably leads either to hatred and exclusion or to despair and apathy. We cannot afford to go in either of these directions. Hatred and exclusion or despair and apathy, we cannot go in either of these directions." Reverend Cantwell goes on to say, "It is urgent that all people of faith and goodwill unite and muster our collective spiritual resources to resist the growing fear and division that are spreading amongst us. Let us stand together to protect the vulnerable and challenge hate whenever we encounter it, including within ourselves. Yes, we will forcefully resist any efforts to strip people of their dignity and rights, but the force we will use is love." We are at a very delicate moment in our collective history right now. We are weary and longing for renewed human connections. We are impatient to return to the way things used to be. It is a very delicate moment because out of our weariness and longings, we are more prone to fear and anger. We are more prone to allow suspicion to erode our hearts and communities, pulling us into distrust and the siloing of thought. We are more prone to radicalization on the left or right than we were even a few years ago. People want to be part of something, to feel like they are in control of their lives in a world moving too fast or too slow or spinning out of control or one they don't even recognize anymore. We all want to be part of something. We all want to belong somewhere. The choice that we have to make is if that need for belonging leads towards hate or towards love. Will we hurt as we have been hurt? Or will we break the cycle of retribution once and for all? Breaking the cycle. This is what Jesus is asking his disciples to do when he says, "Love your enemies, do good, and expect nothing in return." In order to break the cycles of harm and hatred, someone has to make the first move. Someone has to open their heart. Someone has to pick up the phone. Someone needs to write the letter or email or Facebook post. Someone needs to start the conversation. You may have different opinions and values than me. In God's creation, diversity is a good thing. To build the kind of lives and communities and churches we need in this moment of our collective history, we need to set down our word weapons and talk to each other again. We need to live by mercy and forgiveness and grace, not out of some self-serving desire to be right, because love, real love, is its own investment. The poet Amanda Gorman says that our only enemy is that which would make us enemies to each other. To be enemies is a choice Jesus presents to his disciples then and now. We can choose the path of radicalization and retribution, or not. when we are faced with a situation or a person where our anger flares, where we are hurt or embarrassed, when we think that someone ought to know better, we can choose to lash out, to hurt or embarrass, or we can pause. We can recognize what is going on within us, that our only enemy is that which would make us enemies. We can remember our common story as beloved children of God. We can offer our anger and fear to the one strong enough, loving enough to make good even out of evil and life even out of death. We can offer it all to the one who lives resurrection love. With God's help, even amidst the diversity of thought and perspective and lived experience, we can choose to proclaim that we refuse to be enemies. Hatred and exclusion or despair and apathy at this moment in our collective history, we cannot afford to go down either of these paths. We need a better way. The way Christ offers to his disciples then and now, the way of mercy and forgiveness and grace. We need to choose a better way. And it starts right now with each of us. Let's go take the first step.